Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Remember when every place, whether it be a city or small town, had their own locally owned pharmacy? About 16% of independently owned pharmacies have closed in the last decade across the country. And while several factors have contributed to the closings, one that has raised the ire of pharmacies and gotten the attention of state auditors is prescription benefit managers. Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale says consumers, taxpayers, and pharmacies may all be taking a financial hit due to PBMs. We'll address that and other issues on today's program. Joining us is Pennsylvania's Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. Mr. Auditor General, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Scott. Always a pleasure.
Patricia Eppel is the President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association. Ms. Eppel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Chuck Cray is owner and pharmacist of Hershey Pharmacy. Mr. Cray, always good to see you.
Good to be back again, Scott. Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a message on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Mr. Auditor General, I'm going to start with you. You were critical of pharmacy benefit managers in an audit late last year. Why?
The lion's share of that is that Pennsylvania, between 2012 and 2017, increased payments to pharmacy benefit managers by about $2 billion, from $1 billion to $3 billion. And I did not find any equivalent benefit to the taxpayers that would come anywhere close to $2 billion. The pharmacy benefit managers make the case, and in some cases they are correct that they get rebates, but I also believe that some of these rebates artificially inflate, and we can go into this in greater detail later, artificially inflate the price of some prescription drugs. But my biggest concern is that $2 billion increase in taxpayer expenditure, I didn't see anything close to an equivalent benefit of that, and that was the main concern of my report.
Well, when you say, now, we have to kind of follow or connect the dots with a lot of this, of what we'll be discussing today, but when you say taxpayers, $2 billion for taxpayers, in what way? Medicaid?
Medicaid, yeah, the Medicaid portion of the state budget, that's correct.
So what prompted the audit?
Well, we had initially received complaints from local pharmacists of what was going on with how the pharmacy benefit managers were, in a sense, trying to force them, or at least allegedly force them, out of business because the pharmacy benefit managers impact greatly how the pharmacists sell their prescription drugs. And the concern that was being raised was whether the bigger chain pharmacies that also have owned PBMs, whether they were unfairly playing with the independent pharmacists to try to price them out of business. That was the concern that was raised to me. So then what we did was, our report was mostly focused on the taxpayer expenditure through the Medicaid budget. And what we found there was, yes, these pharmacy benefit managers and this sort of, people understand there's big pharma, and then they also know their retail, whether it's a CVS or a Rite Aid or their independent pharmacists. But this third-party middle person is what most people weren't aware of. And finding that about $3 billion in Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars was going to these pharmacy benefit managers and doing it in an unaccountable way, because I am not able to actually audit those entities, that what we found at its core was that they're getting this money, but we had no evidence that they were actually leading to lower prescription drug costs, which was what their main charge was to be.
Yeah, just to let everyone know, provide context, pharmacy benefit managers, this was something that was put in place probably three decades ago as a third-party buyer. The idea was it would allow pharmacies to buy in bulk, which could lead to lower prices. They
exactly
say
right
that it's still happening. In fact, I saw a figure yesterday that an organization that represents PBM said that they will save consumers $650 billion over the next 10 years. I see my guest in the studio shedding some doubt on that figure. What do you think, Mr. DePasquale?
Yeah, there is, as they say, lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. there is certainly an element of truth at its core that they're negotiating rebates, and that's where they're talking about the savings. But they also don't tell you that those rebates come on top of an artificially inflated price. So, for example, it's the oldest trick in the book. Come to our Christmas sale, whatever clothing store, where we're 20% off of shirts this weekend during the holidays or something like that. And then they raise the price of the shirts and then give you the discount, so you're not actually saving any money. That would be the equivalent of thinking about how this rebate scheme works, so that the prices are artificially higher. Then they say they negotiate and get a rebate from certain, it need to be clear, certain prescription drugs, so you're then paying a higher rate, but they can claim they got the rebate.
Patricia Epple, and I just want to interrupt the conversation with the Auditor General right now. He mentioned that pharmacies are forced to work with pharmacy benefit managers. In what way?
Well, all insurance, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, or commercial payers, hire a PBM, pharmacy benefit manager, to manage that prescription benefit. Then in turn, the pharmacy has to contract with the PBM to be able to even provide prescription drugs for patients under those insurance policies.
So what leverage do they have over you?
What leverage does the PBM have?
Yes.
Absolute control. They give pharmacies take it or leave it contracts. They say, if you want this individual to come to your pharmacy to get prescription drugs, you have to accept this pricing, this amount of money that I'm going to pay you. You don't get to say, well, that's not right, I can't buy it at those prices. You have to accept that contract.
Mr. Auditor General, how can something like that go on today? I mean, how's that legal?
It's amazingly legal. And I will say, I want to give credit to the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania. In a very bipartisan way, they've been passing bill after bill that would give me either audit authority, open up the contracts to allow greater transparency with this whole entire system. And it has just never gotten anywhere in the Senate, to be blunt. But the House, in a very bipartisan way, has done this. I think what happened was these entities were originally created to sort of take administrative functions away from some of the pharmacies and to streamline some of those processes and to negotiate with Big Pharma for better prices. I think it has just gotten out of control, where now you literally have these entities that, and what Ms. Epple didn't talk about was, not only do they give these take-it-or-leave-it contracts, but then you'll get about 2 or 3 weeks after the contract is delivered, the retail entity of the pharmacy, whether it be, you know, say, CVS, will, who's also working with, although they say they're not, the pharmacy benefit manager controlled by CVS, which is Caremark, the independent pharmacist will then get a letter saying, hey, we know you're in financial straits. We're happy to buy you out.
You used the word scheme earlier. It almost sounds like a scheme.
Look, you have a entity, a pharmacy benefit manager, that also has a retail outlet. There is supposed to be a firewall between the two, but that's never been fully investigated. And they control the pricing scheme of many, many, many prescription drugs. So that, to me, is a scheme, especially when you're talking about taxpayer dollars at stake, the public health is at stake, and as, whether it be myself or even the Department of Human Services can't actually audit the entities. I find it unconscionable. If they should at least have to open up their books.
You mentioned that the House of Representatives, actually a couple pieces of legislation have made it through committee in the House that would address some of these issues. Don't know if there's anything that is similar in the Senate, but at least it has made it through committee, and maybe when the House returns that there will be some vote. But what that legislation would do, bans on gag clauses. We're going to talk about gag clauses, which is probably, you know, something a lot of people aren't aware of. About gag clauses in a few minutes. Required to be licensed by the state. Mandatory disclosure of drug prices. Limits on patient co-pays and prevention of spread pricing. Before we get into some of the other specifics, what is spread pricing? And Eugene D. Pasquale.
I'm sorry, I didn't know who was supposed to
be. Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I apologize. So basically, with spread pricing is what what'll happen, and Pat can probably talk about in detail how it works at the actual pharmacy level, but it's basically they'll have preferred drugs, and they will, it's called spread pricing, because they will, in a sense, spread the cost out throughout the entire region of their operation, to make it appear as if they are holding down the cost of the drug from the rebate, but it's actually an inflated price to begin with. So how they're making their money is they're forcing all the pharmacists to sell it at a certain price, and then they get to claim that they got the rebate that they give back to the state. And the word spread comes how they're spreading it out throughout the entire system, but it's still the artificially inflated price. So if you ban the spread pricing, you're forcing the negotiation at the individual pharmacy level.
Kentucky is one of the states that has taken action on PBMs. There are a number of states besides Pennsylvania, but Kentucky probably went as far as anyone. They actually banned pharmacy benefit managers. Is that a solution?
Look, it is certainly an option out there. Ohio has done some significant work on this. Texas actually recently had a system where they significantly cut taxpayer costs to the pharmacy benefit managers. Look, it is a private business, so I don't know if you can totally ban them, but I think when it comes to the taxpayer expenditure, we can certainly have it where we get them out of the business of the taxpayer dollars and eliminate the middle person, or at least significantly force them to open up their books. I think in the world of reality politics, I think that's probably the more likely scenario.
Well, and that really is the biggest complaint, is it? The transparency part of it. When you say open up the books, who would look at the books?
It would either be myself as the Auditor General or the Department of Human Services or both.
What about the Department of Health?
Or them, too. When I said Department of Human Services, because they're the ones that are handling the Medicaid budget, but so they would probably have the best jurisdiction there, along with the Department of the Auditor General. But look, if it's the Department of Health that ends up getting the ability to do that, I'm not sure they have the expertise to do it. They certainly have the expertise on what actual medicine is better, but I'm not sure when it comes to the actual auditing function of the money. But look, I'm open to whatever suggestion works.
You know, as someone listening to this conversation, they may say, well, how am I impacted by this? And Mr. Auditor General, I know that we're going to let you run here in a minute. To kind of summarize this, why should Pennsylvanians care about this? As consumers, as taxpayers, why?
After everything is said and done, as a consumer, when they go to the pharmacist, because of all of this nonsense, and again, it's more detailed, people can go to paauditor.gov and see the whole report, but because of all this nonsense, they're paying higher costs for their prescription drugs. That's number one. Number two, if there's a cheaper way for them to buy it, the pharmacist is not actually allowed to tell them.
That's the gag we were talking about.
They're forbidden from telling them. If the consumer asks the question, then the pharmacist is allowed to give the answer. But they're not allowed to proactively give that information out at the pharmacy level. And three, the way this is working with the big chain retail operations and being squeezed out of the system by these pharmacy benefit managers, in small towns and in rural Pennsylvania, there is a lot of loss of the independent pharmacists, which will hurt consumers in the long run. So you have the pharmacy benefit managers increasing the price. Consumers not even allowed to ask for the, or are not able to get the proper information, and the independent pharmacist getting squeezed out of the system means that there will be a lack of competition throughout Pennsylvania, and that's bad for everybody.
Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. You can see some of the shows that we're working on WITF.org/Smart Talk. Some of the programs that we're working on right now is Pennsylvania doing its part in the Chesapeake Bay cleanup, a new bill eliminating property taxes, and Sue Klebold, the mother of Columbine school shooter Dylan Klebold, talks mental health and tells her story. She'll be on Smart Talk here in a few weeks. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today we're talking about the independently owned pharmacies and medication, the price of medication. There are a lot of issues, as you just heard from the Auditor General, but mostly about the pharmacy benefit managers and how they are putting pharmacies and consumers, taxpayers, at a disadvantage. Our guest today, Patricia Epple, is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association, and Chuck Cray, owner and pharmacist at Hershey Pharmacy, been there for a long time. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right. The two of you are aware of all the things that the Auditor General spoke of. I mean, but what I'm curious about, and I'm sure the audience is too, is what this means in the real world. Chuck Cray, you deal with this every day. What does it mean from just the things that the Auditor General described, the disadvantages that you were put at? What does it mean in the real world for consumers?
For consumers, it means a lack of choice. Community pharmacy has the highest ratings of customer satisfaction. Many consumers are locked out of going to their community pharmacy. They're either forced into a mail order or economically disincented to go to a mail order. They may be allowed to get the retail benefit, but they have it structured in such a way that it's cost prohibitive. And they do that by varying the contracts. And again, we're not even allowed to talk about specific contracts, but one of the most difficult things we deal with is all of the take it or leave it ones. We probably have 400 or 500 PBMs that we deal with, and the PBMs will just tell you at the beginning of the year, they'll send a letter out saying this is the new rate. You as an independent owner have no ability to negotiate a contract unless you're in the middle of nowhere and there's no pharmacy around you, whereas at least the chains have the advantage of the size. Where does it play out in the real world? There was a study maybe about 6 months, 9 months ago. A drug called duloxetine had just gone generic. Cymbalta was the brand name. And they were showing the cost at the time was probably about $13 for that month's worth. They were reimbursing community pharmacies, and I'm going to give you round numbers, around $9 or $10 for that. They were reimbursing some of the chains, $67. They were reimbursing their own owned chain about $10 higher than that in the 70s.
Okay, well, let me interrupt you for just a second. Owned chain, talk about that if you would.
Well, certain PBM managers are PBMs, and they also own drug chains.
Right, there's like three big ones.
Yeah, and, right. And obviously the biggest one, the CVS Caremark, the Auditor General pointed out, and there's a lot of referral to their own. One of the latest practices that we see is something called steering. So much of medicine today and so much of the costs are going to specialty drugs. And sometimes we're locked out of those specialty drug contracts. So when they will show a department, here's the overall profit margin, they will say, okay, so the pharmacies are making $4 or $5 a prescription. In reality, on a lot of these, we might be making 25 cents on a prescription. And they might be paying $1,000 profit to a specialty medication. Of course, we cannot fill those specialty medications. The only one that can fill them is their mail order or specialty contract pharmacy. So it makes that overall cost that the Auditor General looked like it's X, but to the independent, it's really way less than X.
Let me make a comparison, though. Other retailers, and I'll ask some questions about the differences between, say, a big box store, a local business, and pharmacies. But other retailers that have had to compete against big box stores or chains like Walmart, some of the bigger ones. Bottom line is you compete or you find something else to do. What's the difference here?
The fact that we don't control our own margin, and we don't even control whether the customer can deal with us. Most times they're going to deal with this. Another example, that'd be lockout networks. There's a former lieutenant governor who's a good golf buddy of mine. I can't give him his flu shot. I can fill him his prescriptions, but I can't give him his flu shot because that particular PBM only allows one chain to do the flu shots. That's what we're asking for, is open accessibility and a fair reimbursement so that we can be on a level playing field. And that's what it takes. All we ask for is a level playing field. Once we get to that, we've got the accessibility. We've got the convenience. We know our community. We're members of our community. We're active in our community. We're going to do well if we have that level field.
Let me ask a question. Why would a customer choose an independently owned pharmacy? And in fact, you know, many customers probably don't even know who owns the pharmacy. They just know it's local. But why would they choose an independent pharmacy over, say, a chain?
One of the most common things that I hear when people come over to us from one of the others is every time they go into one of the chain or big boxes, it's a different pharmacist every time. We're probably the most accessible healthcare professional, and we establish a relationship with our customers. We see them 3-4 times a month. We get to know them, and you know, there's a trust level built up. And so they like the fact that, you know, in my Hershey store, my manager, Mark, has been there for 14 years. They know that I've been there for 30 some years. We're able to provide that face that they know and trust, and I think that promotes compliance with medications. It promotes healthier people when they're compliant with their meds. I was shocked a couple years ago to hear the number one reason why people take their medications is they trust what their pharmacist said about the medication that they need to take it. Compliance yields better health.
What's number one reason they don't?
A lot of times it's cost. A lot of times it's accessibility. Mm. But I read a study in preparing for this that about 75% of Americans say it's not difficult affording their medications. About 25% say it's either somewhat difficult or very difficult. Mm. So, real divide.
Patricia Apple, we talked briefly with the Auditor General about those gag rules. Explain what that is.
Well, gag clauses were something that has impacted greatly for the last few years. However, most PBMs are telling you now that they have removed some of the gag clauses from their contracts. But what it was is, just like the Auditor General described, it would prohibit the pharmacist from saying when a price would be lower to pay by cash, unless they specifically asked. What we're now seeing is another effect in that when pharmacists complain, and several of them have, about the reimbursement rates of the pharmacy benefit managers and other schemes, when they complain, like to the Department of Human Services, the Medicaid program, either through me or directly, when they talk to the media even, the pharmacy benefit managers have come back and threatened that they will kick them out of the network. So it's another form of gag clause that's going a step further, not just in talking to patients and individuals, but now to media, to lawmakers, and agencies about their reimbursement.
So I just want to be clear here that if someone comes into Chuck's pharmacy and he knows there's a generic or a similar medication, and medication would do the same thing, but it costs less. He cannot voluntarily say, "There's a generic here that costs less."
No, that's taking a little bit too far. A generic substitution is usually allowed.
That's by law.
Yes,
right.
Now, there are some times when a pharmacy benefit manager might say, we want you to take this medication and try to force you in a particular way.
Name brand medication.
Yes, yes. However, the gag clause was more whether they could pay cash and get it cheaper.
Okay. But if a customer asks, you can tell them.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So the gag clause only goes to what you've... I mean, Chuck, have you had occasions where this has come into play, where a customer, you're standing there selling them something and you know that there's something less expensive and you can't say it?
One of my best friends, my good dive buddy, he has an inhaler that he uses, and his insurance is mandating the brand when the generic just came back available. And they're charging whatever was the $100 copay for the brand or the $60 copay for the brand. My cost of the generic's like $38 or something, and it would be obviously much less.
So even to a friend, you couldn't do it.
Well, obviously to a friend, I may have done that. But, you know, technically, am I allowed to do that? You know, no. Because they're saying this is our preferred formulary item.
Okay, and again, I just want to be clear. When you say you're not allowed, who is keeping you from doing that?
The pharmacy benefit manager.
Okay, and if you disobey that rule or that clause, when clause sounds like there's a contract involved, what happens?
They can kick you out of the network.
And the network involves what?
The network is the patients that you're able to serve.
Okay.
So if you're kicked out, that means that that patient can no longer come to your pharmacy.
Let's move on to some other issues. Mandatory disclosure of drug prices is in the legislation that has passed committees in the State House of Representatives. What do you think about that?
I personally don't know that it will do a great deal of good. There's so much manipulation on what they pay. And we're down to the fact now that only
what
about...
they pay, meaning customers?
Well, consumers.
Okay.
Out-of-pocket expenses in 2017 were down to 14%. It's everybody else paying for it. So the fact that they know, I'm not sure that it's going to make a big difference on that. They're talking about that in regards to advertising on drugs, which is something that I think America is one of the few countries that does that. I think it leads to probably more confusion and people coming in. I mean, I have a lot of physician friends who they're just frustrated because people come in and tell them what they want. And, you know, is this the best use of that? I don't know. Obviously, it's working for the drug manufacturers because they're increasing their sales on certain products. But is it to the good of the system? I don't think it is.
Well, yeah, I watching the network news at 6:30 every night, almost every commercial is about a medication. I imagine that you have people coming in, I don't know how many times a day, but multiple times a day, saying, I saw this commercial, it does this. Side effects aside, I mean, you start listing the side effects, but I don't know why anyone would want any of them, but it's still, I'm sure you run into that every day.
You do, and physicians do also. It's just one of those things that, you know, people come in now, they know more than you already because they've read 52 articles online about everything, and so you're trying to just see what it is, what their core, their question is, and help them make a wise decision.
Speaking of physicians, we received an email from Dr. Messmer, who says, pharmaceutical benefit managers were introduced as a way of saving patients money by purchasing medication in bulk and arranging deals with the pharmaceutical manufacturers. However, it was apparent to me from the beginning that this was just another way to suck more money out of the patient's pockets because there was too much opportunity to manipulate prices in the market to the benefit of the pharmaceutical benefits managers. Manufacturers agree to sell high-use items at a lower price if the PBM can guarantee a certain number of prescriptions for a favored high-priced drug. Consequently, extreme pressure is placed on physicians to prescribe the preferred drug regardless of how well a patient is doing on a similar and equivalent medication. All right, so he has more, but I'm going to stop right there. Chuck Gray, you said to me that you have heard physicians that have complained about this as well.
Yes, and even the amount of staffing for it. Most physicians' offices have somebody now that's their job to work on prior authorizations where the insurances are telling them, I'm not going to cover this, I'm going to cover that. And so we're constantly having to call back and forth and make changes in a patient's protocol. And again, I'm from the old school where, you know, the oldest rule is if it's not broken, don't fix it. If somebody's stable on X regimen, why are we going to change it to Y regimen? Because the PBM's going to get a bigger percent back from the Y manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. So, Patricia, when, you know, and I feel like we're just doing nothing but bashing PBMs here. There has to be some benefit to it. When I said that they said they're going to save consumers $650 billion over the next 10 years, I saw you shaking your head that you doubted that a whole lot. Why?
Well, to go back to, do they serve a purpose? Let's start there. Yes, they are a claims processor. They do serve some benefit. And when they first came into being, they did serve that purpose. It's when they started playing some of these games that we've been talking about and making money on those games that it's been real crucial on that. And your second part of your question was...
you talked about why they had put $650 billion. You seemed skeptical of that.
Yeah, I think exactly like the Auditor General said, it's based on artificially inflated prices. Yes, they're getting money on rebates, but they're also up, the pharmaceutical companies are upping their prices to cover those rebates. So there's no real savings. If the pharmaceutical companies did not have to deal with rebates, they would sell the drugs maybe at a lower price. So the idea of negotiating rebates is, quite frankly, just a smoke and mirrors tactic.
Mm-hmm. Chuck,
Scott, if I could take that to a next level. We've gone through in America in the last 3-4 years drug shortage of unprecedented numbers, where all of a sudden a very common medication, you can't get it. IV solutions were recently. There's just been one every week. Tuberculin testing solution is unavailable right now. At a conference last year, I one of the biggest drug companies in the world. I saw their rep there. He had gray hair like I do, so I figured he'd been around. So I asked them the real question: what is the real reason? Obviously, for a while it was the Puerto Rico hurricane. So much for our manufacturing there. He gave me the standard line. I gave him the I want the real reason. He said, off the record, we are getting beat up so bad for rebates that we will look in the mirror and say, I'm not sure I want to make that product anymore. So what's the next logical step? You go from 6 manufacturers of X drug to 4 manufacturers. What happens? There's a shortage for about 6 months till the manufacturing catches up. What happens right after that? The price goes up by those 4. I don't think we're saving money in the system with all this. And when you look at it as a system-wide issue, I think they're contributing to drug shortages if this man's answer is to be believed.
When you say beaten up for rebates, what do you mean by that?
The PBMs will go to all these manufacturers, both brand and generic, and they will ask for rebates. That's where they're saying they're saving the money. But that money is not necessarily making its way back to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said earlier about advertising prices. I mean, something that we haven't seen on the consumer level, retail level, and I'm wondering if it's something that we may down the road, these rebates that customers actually would see rebates.
We would just like the transparency. Then let people decide where it should go. As long as everybody knew what are the real numbers involved, then I think you could make intelligent decisions about who deserves what piece of the pie. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we'd all like to lower medication costs, including the manufacturers.
Well, let me ask you that question. For someone who's in the industry, I was a little bit surprised when you said that 75% say they can afford their medication, 25%. But most people would say who are taking medication on a regular basis, they have at least one that they complain about the cost. In your mind, why do drugs cost what they do? I mean, we keep hearing about, and if both of you can weigh in on this one, I'm sure this is a question you're asked all the time, probably by customers. Why does this cost so much? But, you know, we hear from the pharmaceutical companies that research and development is what costs so much. Something you mentioned earlier, Chuck, advertising. A lot of people say, well, if you didn't advertise so much, spend so much on advertising, it wouldn't cost as much. They deny that. They say it's the R&D. You're in the industry. Why does medication cost what it does?
I was looking at that yesterday, and some of the factors. They only have so many years now to market a brand when they bring it out. There is an awful lot of research and development cost. We have the greatest medical system on the planet. There is no doubt about that. But we pay an awful lot of money for it. So now they have X number of years to market, so they're going to charge a really high price. One of the biggest factors in the last 5 to 7 years, specialty pharmacy, if you're familiar with that term. So there's a lot of these medications that may need special handling. They may be very expensive. There's a reason for them being called specialty. That is almost 50% of the drug spend in America this year. And yet it accounts for 2% of the prescriptions. So specialty is really taking the numbers up. I think the direct advertising, somehow, some way, we've heard it talked about in Washington, but I found a couple examples. So Humira, they'll use for autoimmune diseases. Switzerland, $822 a month. Great Britain, $1,362. The USA, $2,669 a month. Xarelto, anticoagulant, $102, $126, $292. At some point in time, you know, do I have an issue subsidizing a developing country? Not at all. But why are we allowing us to be paying for all the medicine, all the research costs, everything else on Americans' backs? We need to level that field.
Trump administration recently talked about importing medications from Canada because medications are just as an example of you just gave, Canada much less expensive. What do you think about that?
Well, it would love to be able to do it from a wholesale perspective. From the retail side, you're going to put every pharmacy in America out of business because I look at those ads every week in the Patriot and you know, from the Canadian pharmacy that's in there, and I look at those things and they're so far below my cost, what they're selling them at, we can't compete. Like I said, it's way below the cost. Whatever way we need to tackle that issue, I think we need to tackle that issue.
But Chuck, when you say we have the greatest healthcare system on earth, that there's no doubt. There would be many people who would say, yes, there is a doubt because of just some of the reasons you listed. So why do you say that we have the greatest healthcare system?
I think the accessibility, the research we do, we subsidize a lot of the world's healthcare. And, you know, it comes with being a nation that is hopefully going to maintain its status as a world leader. There are great systems out there. Most of the socialized systems There's a lot of people waiting 6-8 months for simple procedures. That's my fear of with going that direction.
But when we're subsidizing other countries and people who can't afford it, there are many, many people in this country who can't afford it. I mean, again, I'm sure you deal with them every day, that there are people who say, $200 for this drug, I need this drug to live.
And many of the manufacturers have put out programs for some of these low-income people that we can find coupons, we can find vouchers. Unfortunately, a lot of them are for 1 year or something like that. But you know, at some point, America's going to have to look in the mirror and say, what can we afford to cure? And we're now Hep C and some of those things. We're really talking a lot about prevention. We've been talking with the physician general in Pennsylvania about that, but more immunization. But you know, we can be spending $40,000, $50,000 for a course of treatment for these things. So some of these meds, the price of the meds are just... That's what's really driving the healthcare costs overall in the U.S.
Mm. Patricia, with one that has gotten a lot of attention recently is insulin. And I know I'm off track a little bit here, but since I have a couple of pharmacists here, insulin and the price has really gone up. Let's face it, this country, we have a lot of diabetics, type 1 diabetics, the more and more type 2 as more obesity across the country. But what about that? What are there any trends that we're seeing there?
Well, actually, I think Chuck can speak a little bit better to that. But what I want to throw in the mix here is one of the reasons to keep community independent pharmacies alive and well in Pennsylvania is the care that they deliver. And diabetic patients need lots of care because oftentimes there's many complications there. And having your community pharmacy help with that care on a diabetic patient is crucial.
Yeah, insulins and the manufacturers did take a pretty good beating for that. And all of a sudden, we've come out with bioequivalent insulins. And in one case, Humalog, which insulin therapy has changed drastically in the last 7 years. And so the two main types are basal and bolus. And one of the bolus ones has recently come out with, it's the brand maker making its own generic. And so if the brand I'm paying $500 AWP for a box of five pens, the other one I'm paying about $300. So they've kind of all of a sudden realized they took some heat and they've backed off and there are a couple bioequivalents and actual generic for one of the insulins now.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's program, you may have heard recently the governor of Maryland has been critical of Pennsylvania's efforts, saying that Pennsylvania has not done enough, held up its end of the bargain, or at least what was agreed to with the Chesapeake Bay cleanup. So we're going to be talking about that on tomorrow's program as well. Also, products that are advertised as natural. Are they really natural? We have a Gettysburg College professor who has done some research on that and whether these products are actually natural. That is coming up on tomorrow's program. You can visit our website to get an outlook of conversations we're working on. Plus, you can leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today, we're talking about pharmacies, independently owned pharmacies, and some of the challenges that they're facing and ultimately some challenges or maybe some things that consumers are not aware of. Our guest today, Patricia Eppel, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association, and Chuck Cray, owner and pharmacist at Hershey Pharmacy. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk.com. WITF. Again, the phone number 1-800-729-7532. We have a few emails. Gary emails us, why has antitrust not been pursued against CVS Caremark? More often, we are seeing CVS Caremark forcing our patients to use their mail order plan. It is akin to the old company store concept. How much of this issue could be alleviated by following the German model of pharmacy practice where there are no chains and ending manufacturer rebates? Now, there are several issues there. Antitrust. Patricia, what about that?
Well, certainly from the Pharmacy Association standpoint, we've alleged that. Our national groups have alleged that as well. But for one reason or another, the Federal Trade Commission continues to approve mergers when they happen. So the CVS original merger with Caremark, the PBM, was approved. And just recently, a challenge to a previous merger with Aetna and CVS was the judge ruled that that was okay as well. So, yeah, I agree with the antitrust allegations, but they don't seem to stand up.
And let me just add here that this is, again, not to bash CVS or other chains that have many, many satisfied customers. But CVS Caremark is one of what you had described earlier with that are linked to these pharmacy benefit managers. Sarah asked, she said the pharmacist mentioned ads and their influence. Now, there's one specific that she's talking about here. A few years ago, there were multiple TV ads for drugs to treat shaky leg syndrome. I have never heard of this diagnosis and thought it was phony, designed for the gullible elderly. These ads no longer appear. What's the story behind the initiation and demise of these ads?
That one's easy. The drug is Requip that she's referring to for restless leg syndrome. And when Requip was brand, they were advertising the heck out of it. It's generic now, so they no longer have any incentive to advertise the drug because the generic is available and inexpensive.
Do you have a lot of patients with...
We do, in the older population. You'll get a lot. It's a fairly common diagnosis.
Okay.
My sister has that.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So it is legit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rich, 2 years ago, I got a letter from my insurance company saying that I could no longer go to Walmart, but would have to go to CVS if I wanted to use my insurance discount. Wants to know why.
Even the big chains, that's where we as independents struggle to the nth degree, because we're one or represent one or two stores. We cannot negotiate any kind of reasonable contract. Even the chains like Walgreens or Walmart, as big as they are, can't necessarily negotiate with some of these big PBMs. And it's just the fact that they've gotten so big that they are abusive in many instances.
What are some of the other challenges facing independently owned pharmacies, Patricia?
I would say the biggest challenge is anything related to pharmacy benefit managers. It's just the latest scheme that comes up. There's a thing called generic effective rates that they take back money after they've paid the pharmacy. There's a thing called DIR rates that comes from the Medicare. They take back money from the pharmacy again after they paid them for the drugs. I've had pharmacies say that they've had amounts like $72,000 taken back from them later in the year. This is after they already gave the medication out, filed the claim, thought they were whole or close to whole in the reimbursement scheme, and then found they still owed $72,000. So anything related to the pharmacy benefit manager is probably the biggest challenge out there.
I mentioned earlier, and I want to ask about this, 16% of independently owned pharmacies went out of business in the last decade. Why?
Let me make that personal for you. There's five in Dauphin and Lebanon County in the last 18 months. And it is, to a large degree, the PBM. Most independent pharmacists have gone into it because they love helping people and they love what they do. I still love that aspect of what I do. But it's tough when you go out there. And give me an example. There's an eye drop that will fill. It costs me $128. The PBM is paying me $86. So how many of those can I fill till it's time to shutter the door? And that's what so many pharmacies have found. The things where they show that, okay, you're making an average profit on this, so many of those are being steered into their specialty or mail order, not being available to the independent on a day-by-day basis.
Chuck, you brought props today. You have a box here of, I can't see how many bottles. It looks like there's about 10 or so bottles. And you've talked a couple times about mail order. And I think almost everyone out there who has purchased a medication that they take on long term has been asked or maybe told, get a 90-day supply as opposed to get your 30-day supply. For a consumer, that sounds like a good thing. Is it?
It is in certain instances. Overall, I don't think it does a lot for the system. Here's why. So this came in yesterday. It wasn't like I've been holding this for
this
thing.
And these are big bottles. How many?
There's probably, there's about 6-7 bottles here. It's probably a 3-month supply of this particular medication, a brand. The patient passed away. He'd been on hospice. Every 3 months, they're sending in this supply. There's about $3,200 worth of this particular medication in there. About 3 years ago, we did a legislative day in Washington as part of our National Community Pharmacists Association. There was a pharmacist from Iowa that had a box that was a box. It was a, good-sized box of medications. It was someone who was getting them when he's mandatory mail order. He was getting this every 3 months. two or three of the meds had been discontinued. The patient had called the PBM. The pharmacy had called for them. They kept coming. Why? Because they're billing the insurance for them. They're getting the profit for them. And it was about $20,000 in that box. So how many, if we're making $5, $10 on a prescription on an average, how many of those do you get when you throw $3,000 away? That's 300, 600 scripts you have to...
So there's 3,200 hours worth of pills there.
That is garbage.
That will be thrown away.
Yes.
Where will it be thrown away?
Right now, the state of the art is you're putting it in plastic containers, putting something in to make it unusable, kitty litter, water, whatever, and...
Why can't this be used for other people?
Pennsylvania does not allow laws, and the simple reality of it is... Would you want to take something where it's been handled by someone else and you don't know what that is? I'm guaranteeing you when you get something from us of the handling, it's been temperature control, tampering. That's where the 90-day fails.
3,200 hours worth of drugs. I'm assuming that's the wholesale.
Yes.
Okay. What did this gentleman who passed away, what did he pay for it?
I don't know that answer. It was, this particular one happened to be a VA.
So he probably paid nothing for it then.
Yeah, but the system paid.
But the system paid, exactly.
The consumer eventually paid because that's going to be that much more into our VA benefit. That's going to be that much more we're paying as a nation for the medication. That's what we have to start looking at, the global fixes for the solution. Where are we wasting money and how can we save the system money?
Well, here's a global question. Carol emails us, what might be the cause of 1,000% rise in the price of a generic drug, and what can a consumer do about it? A generic drug, Salsolate?
Yes.
Is that how it's pronounced? Was about 10 cents per pill in the 80s and 90s. Now it's over a dollar a pill. In addition, it's not even on the Medicare approved list, so I must pay in cash for it as it really works well for my RA. Any suggestions? RA, what's RA?
Rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay. 1,000% increase?
And it could be, and I'm not familiar with that particular one, but as I said, it's probably one of those things where the number of manufacturers probably cut down because it's not as popular as it used to be. There's so many new things now. The RAs, that's one of the medication fields that is really one that the U.S. spends more money on. The Enbrel, some of those kind of things. You're talking $4,000 or $5,000 a month we're using with injectables for some of these people, Humira. And it's very expensive. So we use less and less of the pills now, so there's probably less manufacturers. Perfect example of that, about 7-8 years ago, doxycycline, very common generic. We used to pay about $50 for a bottle of 500, went unavailable for maybe 3 to 6 months. It came back, that bottle of $50, 500, was $500 for 500. Now, it's kind of since backed off, and it's into a normal 100 whatever anymore, but this is not uncommon.
We only have about 2 minutes, and I'm, there's so many questions that pop up, but, I made an analogy with other retail businesses earlier, but when it comes to prescription medication, how is pricing decided?
By the PBM? Only by the PBM. The pharmacy does not set the price.
Less than 5% of our prescriptions are filled as cash anymore. 95%, we're told what we're charging for them.
How did these PBMs get the kind of power they have?
We're asking that question daily.
We're almost out of time. I want to thank you for being with us today. So, Patricia, what are you looking for from the state, legislators? I mean, this seems like a federal issue as well.
Right. Well, that's the problem. It's a federal issue for Medicare. It's a state issue for Medicaid. And then it's an employer and private payer for all their insurance. We are working with the Department of Human Services on fixes for the Medicaid program. And I have to say that we're very pleased with the progress we're making. They're being very receptive, and we continue to work with them as well as the governor's office on that, as well as the legislature. So we need fixes. We're working on those. We're starting with Medicaid. We need to tackle the other ones as well.
I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Patricia Eppel is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Pharmacist Association. Chuck Cray, owner and pharmacist at Hershey Pharmacy. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thanks,
thank
Scott.
You.
I know it's a complicated issue, and I'm going to try to ask questions that would clarify it for a lot of people. Their bottom line is taxpayers and consumers could be paying more, not getting what they need. So we'll see if the legislature acts on that. Coming up on tomorrow's program, again, we're going to be talking about the Chesapeake Bay and whether Pennsylvania is doing its part in the agreement to clean up the Chesapeake Bay, and also products that advertise themselves as natural and whether they really are using natural ingredients and are natural. That's coming up on tomorrow's show, so be sure to tune in. Have yourself a good day.